Hi, I'm an introductory shot of the Phantom that zooms through the floorboards and ends on his scalp for some goddamn reason. Taylor.
And I'm going to the cemetery tits out for my dead dad, Jemmy. And this is the Final Girl Files. This week we traveled down once more to the dungeons of my black despair and watched 2004's Phantom of the Opera, directed by Joel Schumacher and starring Gerard Butler, Emmy Rossum, and your friend and mine, Juicy Pat.
Patrick Wilson, baby!
April Fools, I guess. We didn't exactly try to hide it this year.
No, this year we didn't even... We goofed a little bit, but...
Come on now, you didn't think we were going to do another Lloyd Webber outing? Oh,
truly,
boy.
There is no better... I guess newly running gag than us getting an excuse to be theater kids once a year.
Yay!
Only this time we're back in hell, and it's not a good musical. It's a good musical.
Well, it's a good musical, but it's not a good movie.
It's a bad movie made out of a good musical.
So you want to talk about our stories with Phantom of the Opera? I mean, do we have to do trigger warnings for Phantom of the Opera? Like,
I mean,
stalking, murder. Guy with a noose.
Incest?
Real bad singing. Take you right back to chorus class, baby.
Yeah. Oh, God.
And Patrick Wilson's wig.
And, yeah, there should be a trigger warning for some of the wigs in this film, I agree.
They're real bad.
They're bad wigs. But, yeah, backstories with Phantom. Do you want to go first?
Sure. For this movie specifically, I don't remember the first time I watched it. But, like, for Phantom as a whole, I think it's always sort of existed on the peripheries of my life until I saw it for the first time. Like, I would see stuff about Phantom of the Opera and be like, yeah, that seems like something I would vibe with. And then, like, nothing else. I wouldn't say anything else. I wouldn't try and seek it out. I wouldn't, like, anything. I just... That's all. And I was in the Les Mis fandom.
I'm sorry.
Yeah, it was a bad time. From about, like, late 2010 to probably, like, 2013-ish is when I started getting into Doctor Who instead. And, like, I think back in those days, I don't know what the culture is now. I did just see a Tumblr poll about favorite musicals that didn't have Les Mis or Phantom on it, and that was scary. I don't know what the culture is now, but most of the people... If you were into one of these musicals back in the day, you were also kind of into the other. Like, I was into Les Mis as my main thing, but I also was into Phantom. It was funny because Jamie was super into Phantom as his main thing, and, like, Les Mis was a secondary thing. But there was a lot of overlap, so I became a Phantom fan by being in the Les Mis fandom, ironically enough. But I love Phantom of the Opera, the musical. It's one of my favorites. Taylor and I actually just went to go see it back in January because it is unfortunately closing on Broadway this month, right?
Yeah, this month.
For Bad Cinderella.
Ugh. Andrew.
We are in the darkest timeline, or at least one of the darkest timelines. Andy, for fuck's sake. Anyway, let's not dwell on that. This movie, I feel like this is the movie that if you were... around sort of our age bracket and you were in chorus class in high school, you watched this movie in chorus class, except my chorus teacher was a fucking crazy person. And instead of Phantom of the Opera, we watched Chicago.
Okay, slay.
Which completely rewired my brain at age 14, by the way. We're probably never, like, Chicago's never going to be our joke musical on here because it's not, like, bad.
No, because it's a good movie.
It's a good movie and it's not horror. But we watched Chicago instead of Phantom of the Opera, I guess, and that's why I'm gay.
Yeah, that'll do it.
But I mean, I love Phantom of the Opera. I just finished... I mean, this isn't a good thing, but I just finished rereading Kay's Phantom, which... Oh boy, somehow this is a worse adaptation of Phantom of the Opera than that.
It might not be a good thing, but it is a thing.
It is a thing. And yeah, that's about my history with Phantom. How about you, Taylor?
First encountered Phantom of the Opera in a book about movie monsters that I read when I was a child that said something about, like, oh, like, He's a weirdo who pretends to be a ghost. He had, like, a little entry in this, like, Encyclopedia of Monsters book for children.
Mm-hmm.
And it was like, oh, he's, like, a weirdo who's, like, he wears a mask and he lives under the opera house and he's obsessed with this girl who's, like, a singer. And I remember being like, that sounds so slay. And then I was, like, a child, so I never really... That was about as far as it went. I just remember thinking, like, oh, that's slay.
Yes, Yasin Slay, and he's correct for that.
I was like, oh, cool. But I didn't do any research beyond that. And then I remember it was, like, sort of the same thing where I was very into Les Mis and Phantom around the same time. And I remember thinking that this movie was good, which...
I'm sorry about that.
It's okay.
Listen, I thought the Les Mis movie was good when I first saw it. We all make mistakes.
So did I, unfortunately. So, yeah, I thought this movie was good. I remember watching it on TV. I was never, like, very into this movie. I just kind of thought it was like, oh, it's good, but I prefer the musical, you know? Mm-hmm. Like...
kind of like how I feel about Sweeney Todd.
Yeah, like, I was like, it's a serviceable movie, but, like, it doesn't compare to the musical. I don't think I quite understood how bad it was, because I never really watched it.
Can I stop you for a second? I think I know exactly what you're going to say, and it's what I was also what I'm also going to get into later.
Is it the Lindsay Ellis video essay? Yeah. And I remember when she posted it, because it was like... I was working at the library. I was working at my local library, and I had like a long period of time where my job was that I had to be just like doing like little tasks on my own for the summer reading club. So they would let me listen to music because I was in a room by myself. But what I would actually be doing was listening to video essays.
The way I do at work now, yeah.
Yes, exactly. So... and I remember watching I wasn't really watching it. I had kind of had my phone next to me and I was mostly listening to it, but I was kind of watching it too. The Lindsay Ellis video essay about this movie, The Phantom of the Opera 2004. And I remember being like, I do not remember it being that bad. It can't be that bad. And then I was watching the video and I was like, oh, wow. I don't remember a lot of this stuff. I didn't remember most of this. Wow. Yeah. Yikes.
And listeners, it is that bad.
And it is that bad. And so, yeah, I guess I probably wouldn't have, maybe I would have watched it, but like, I probably wouldn't have quite grasped because like, I love to talk about filmmaking, but, like, there's a level of depth with that video essay with regards to just how this movie fails on a filmmaking level that I'm not really well-versed enough in the process of filmmaking to talk about.
Watching this video essay for the first time, because I also watched it when it first came out, was sort of... and I had been in, like, high school film classes, which taught me sort of the very, very basics of, like, film language and how to speak that language and how a director uses the tools that they have at their disposal. But I'd never really thought about how badly someone could fuck that up until I watched the video essay that Lindsay Ellis put out. And I have to thank her, because watching that video essay is kind of one of the pieces of why I got so interested in film enough to say, this is a thing that I want to study. It's like that and watching The Conjuring 2. So thanks, Lindsay. Thank you for inspiring me. Handshake emoji,
Lindsay Ellis, The Conjuring 2.
Thank you for inspiring me, along with my good friend James Wan. I mean, the overlap here really is Juicy Pat.
That's so unfortunate.
Okay, before we get started, I am proposing a movie to a new psychological thriller about Patrick Wilson on the set of this movie. Patrick Wilson, who I can only imagine, like, got cast in this movie, was like, oh, cool, great, I'm in, like, the movie adaptation of one of the most popular musicals on Broadway, got to set, and was, like, slowly realized, like, oh, hey, Patrick, here's the terrible wig you have to wear, and also your 17-year-old co-star, and also I want you to be sexy with her. And I just want a psychological thriller about the slow realization that he is in Lord Andy's fuck house.
Yeah.
And yeah. The horrors that come with that. Was she 17? I think I feel like she was like 17, 18.
She was 16, I think.
Oh, cool. Even worse.
Yeah. It's worse, actually.
It's worse than I thought. Great.
Fun fact, it's worse. Yeah. Emmy Rossum was 16 during the making of this film, which is so bonkers. Okay. I'm just going to get into why I hate that.
Can I quickly just do the plot?
Oh, yes, of course. Sorry. I was about to start bitching. Go for it.
Very strange to have to say this plot because everyone I know knows the plot of Phantom of the Opera, but let's just do it. From his hideout beneath a 19th century Paris opera house, the brooding Phantom schemes to get closer to vocalist Christine Daae. The Phantom, wearing a mask to hide a congenital disfigurement, strong arms management into giving the budding starlet key roles, but Christine instead falls for arts benefactor Raoul. Terrified at the notion of her absence, the Phantom enacts a plan to keep Christine by his side while Raoul tries to foil the scheme. The weirdest summary of Phantom of the Opera's plotline that I've ever read, if I do say so myself, but that's what Google is telling me, so I am going to stick with it.
You know what? I trust Google.
You know what? It makes sense because this is just a terrible adaptation all around. So... please hit me with that discussion of why this is a bad thing.
It is crazy how much this film infantilizes Christine, and it is something that I hate so much about not just this movie, but also Susan Kay's Phantom. And also, like, there are just other adaptations that do this shit, and... It makes me angry because not even in the musical is she such a spineless, wet napkin of a character.
Truly.
She, in the book and in the fucking Lloyd Webber musical, has a backbone. She talks back. She fights back. Like, yes, she is, in terms of narrative function, the several quotation marks around this, the victim, whatever you want to say about that. But, like, she doesn't take her position as the victim sitting down. And she is routinely, she's always taking every opportunity to get one on the Phantom when she can. And I do not like that in this movie specifically. And I don't know if it's the writing or the directing or Emmy Rossum's performance. It's probably just all three. But it's just, there's something so... little about her. There's something so she's just kind of, she has her big eyes and the makeup they put her in just makes her eyes look even bigger, and she's just kind of wibbling throughout the whole film, and it makes me angry as someone who loves Christine as a character to see her portrayed like this.
Listen, if you want a good idea of what Christine Daae should be, just Google Phantom of the Opera, Katie Hall, Tears of Hate.
Real.
Click on the first option. That's it. That is Christine Daae.
She is frothing with rage. She is like a small little chihuahua who will bite you.
There is a reason, and I'm saying this for three people only. There is a reason there is a direct line of descendants from Christine Daae to Melanie Ravenswood.
It's just, it makes me angry. Watching this film angered me on a character level because, like, again, I haven't seen this movie in years. The last time we watched it was together. And I don't think even when we were watching it the last time that I quite, because I was really barely paying attention to it the last time we watched it.
I can't imagine why.
Yeah. I didn't quite grasp just how badly Christine gets character assassinated in this film. It's really upsetting to see. I hate it. I hate how they do her. I hate it. They do her so dirty.
On a technical level as well, casting a 16-year-old as Christine Daae, one of the most vocally challenging roles on Broadway, is deeply insane. Yeah. It's insane. No 16-year-old has vocal cords that are developed enough to sing this role. And, like, Eddie Rossum is a fine actress. I know she can act. I've seen her in other things. I know she's, like, a great actress. I know she can sing now. Because, you know, she's, what, in her, like, 30s now? Or, like, late 20s? I don't know. She's, you know, she's an adult now. She sounds like every girl in your choir class. Or, like, the girl in your choir class who gets all the solos because she does sound good. But also, her vocal cords aren't developed yet. I'm sorry.
She's very good for a 16-year-old. But she's a 16-year-old. She's a child. Child voice. Child vocal cords.
And unfortunately, there is also the level here of fucking Lord Andy's fucking nonsense about Christine and the Phantom, which we can also get into with Gerard Butler being cast in this role. I feel the same way about Gerard Butler in this role that I do about Laurie Davidson in the role of Mr. Mistopheles in the Cats movie.
Oh, interesting.
Like, okay, so with Misto, it was like, why would you cast this extremely dance-heavy role in a dance musical? Why would you cast someone who can't dance? The Phantom is perhaps, like, the male role on Broadway right now. Why on God's good green flat fucking earth would you cast someone with no singing experience as the Phantom of the Opera, a character who is characterized by his ability to sing? What is wrong with you, Andy? And I know the answer. I know the answer is that it's because he's hot and Lord Andy would rather die than not cast a hot Phantom, which is a whole other thing of its own. And you know what? My hot take here is that he's not even hot in this movie. He looks like an Elvis impersonator.
Big agree.
He looks like a fucking Elvis impersonator. He's not even hot. I'm sorry.
His wig is stupid.
It's so bad.
He looks stupid. Here's the thing. I have found him hot in other things.
Oh, yeah. Gerard Butler is an incredibly attractive man.
Gerard Butler's hot. I know how controversial that is.
Yeah, I know. Dropping some real hot takes here on this
but
episode.
I will go on the record saying the guy who has played leads in multiple rom-coms is hot.
Shocking.
Yeah, I know. But something about, and like to me, this is a bizarre comparison, but to me it's the like Alan Rickman Snape thing. Where it's like, Alan Rickman was a hot guy. You put a bad wig on a hot guy, it does him no favors.
Nope.
Like, Gerard Butler fucking ruined by the wig and the costume in this film. Like,
the closest
he
gets to
much
hot
like Alan
is
Rickman
at the end.
Was ruined by the Snape wig and the big long black dress they put him in the Harry Potter movies. Like, that's no longer a sexy man. That's a freaking weirdo.
The closest he gets to hot is at the end, which is insane because it's when, well, I mean, the deformity, and I'm making, like, the God's biggest air quotes around this, by the by. Like, it's supposed to be when he's at his most monstrous and ugly. That's the closest he gets to hot in this movie, I'm sorry.
Well, the reason that is true is because he's the most, like, stripped down.
Yeah.
In that moment, and he looks the most like actual Gerard Butler, who is a hot guy.
Exactly. Also, like, I just want to get this out of the way. The reason the stage deformity is the way it is, covering only half of the actor's face, is because otherwise the actor has difficulty singing. And I can honestly imagine that even with the half face, it's a little bit tough. This is a movie.
Yeah.
This is a fucking movie where they're not even singing live in this movie because Tom Hooper hadn't cursed the movie musical with that little tidbit yet. There is no fucking excuse as to why his deformity looks like that other than Lord Andy was scared of the Phantom not being hot. Do you know what happens a few years later? A few years later, and I hate to bring this back around to my good old Marvels, a few years later, we get fucking Red Skull in Captain America.
And that shit looked so good.
And that shit should have been what Eric looked like. Well, you know what? I'm not calling him Eric. Fuck that. That should be how the Phantom looked like in this movie. That's not Eric. That's hashtag not my Eric.
Yeah, that's not Eric. That's the Phantom. It's so... This movie... angers me because, well, partially because, unlike a lot of people, unlike Lindsay Ellis, personally, I do not think Joel Schumacher is a bad director.
No, I know Joel Schumacher can make a movie. I've seen The Lost Boys, and also, hot take, Batman and Robin was trying to be a campy Batman movie, and it succeeded on that.
I have spoken about this at length. I also believe Batman and Robin and Batman Forever are good movies. Fuck the haters. They're good. I think Joel Schumacher can direct a fucking movie. The problem with Joel Schumacher is that, and again, like I said, I don't know very much about the technical aspects of filmmaking, so maybe, Jemmy, you can elucidate a little bit of this for me, but I feel like the problem with Joel Schumacher is that he is more of an actor's director and not so much a holding the camera director. So, like, how good any of his movies are on a technical level is entirely reliant on the cinematographers that he hires and, like, who he is working with. Which is rough, I will say. Like, that can be damning for a director, and sometimes it is, as in this film. But it's just hard to make a movie like that. And but, like, when Joel Schumacher has people on his team who know how to, like, set up a shot, his movies rip. They rip. Fuck you. Joel Schumacher, director? Good, actually. Rest in peace, King.
I need you to stay with me on what I'm about to say.
I'm with you.
When I was in my early 20s, which is a horrible sentence that I can say now, I was in a production of Little Shop of Horrors.
As you do.
And this production of Little Shop of Horrors was directed by a man. Lovely man. Not going to name names, but, you know, lovely guy. This man wanted more than anything. Judging by the vibes of how he directed this production of Little Shop of Horrors, he wanted to be directing the Rocky Horror Picture Show. Because every time he would talk about the vibe he wanted from this show, it was always sexy. And I don't know if you guys have seen Little Shop of Horrors. It's not a sexy show.
The idea of directing a sexy Little Shop of Horrors is kind of insane and wild.
It was also weird because most of our cast were, like, you know, high school kids. But we're not going to even touch that. So, I think Joel Schumacher has the same problem that this director has, in that Joel Schumacher, and Lindsay Ellis touches on this in her video essay a lot, Joel Schumacher saw Moulin Rouge and said, I want to do that. But Phantom of the Opera is such a completely different beast than Moulin Rouge. And I see this the most in how like sleazy Joel Schumacher wants the opera house to be.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
Like, all the stuff with, like, the stagehands and, like, that's not in the musical, by the way. This is extrapolated, I think, mostly from one gag in the musical where, like, the big, and this is also in the movie, where the big elephant prop turns around and there's, like, two guys drinking in it, and it's, like, in the music stage musical, it's just, like, a ha-ha moment because, you know, the show opens with rehearsal for Hannibal, and it's just sort of like a moment of, like, pulling back the curtain, like, oh yeah, we're in a production, we're in a performance, and this is just rehearsal and stuff like that. But Joel Schumacher carries this weird, like, energy throughout the movie where he keeps cutting to, like, the stagehands being kind of sleazy and weird, and it just doesn't work for Phantom of the Opera, which is such a, like, capital R romantic musical. It's too grounded for Phantom of the Opera.
Yeah, completely agree. It's very strange to be doing these, like, weird cutaways to, like, well, here's what the, you know, the, like, technical workers are doing at this point in time. Like, it's even during Masquerade, when they're cutting down to, like, the other party that, like, they're having underneath, I guess, where it's like, oh, ho, ho, they're dancing too, but it's like,
hey Joel, I saw Titanic 2. Sorry, that's a joke directly lifted from Lindsay Ellis. But I have to say it. I saw Titanic 2, Joel. We're not watching Titanic right now.
But it's such a weird place for it to go, because that's the part of the song where, like, the music gets all sinister. And it's like, Oh, it's scary. We're cutting down to the weird, sleazy, like, technical staff. And it's like, What?
Also, while we're on the subject of Masquerade, watching Masquerade in this movie feels, and again, I'm sorry, I keep doing the Marvel references, but watching Masquerade in this movie feels like watching the first Doctor Strange movie, where I'm like, wow, this would look really great with color.
Okay, for fucking real, it made me so angry to see everybody's costumes being fucking black and white.
Black, white, and gold, baby, that's all we got! That's all we got for the fucking Masquerade Ball!
And it's crazy, because the stage costumes are so colorful and so beautiful.
And the lyrics themselves are talking about how colorful the masquerade is.
But it's not.
Where's the trace of rouge? I don't see it.
I also hate the fucking, like, we're speaking a part of the song that is normally sung. Like, where Christina's like, look at it, a secret engagement. And it's like, why are you saying that?
This movie is so, like... Simultaneously, Joel Schumacher wants to be directing Moulin Rouge, but he's also terrified of this movie being a musical. Terrified of this movie being a musical. And it's like, Joel, it's Phantom of the Opera. I think Lindsay Ellis puts this... I'm sorry, we're just going to keep referencing the Lindsay Ellis video, but she puts it the most succinctly in, like, this movie is both too grounded and not grounded enough. Or not, yeah. It's too grounded, but also too stylized in a way. Like, it can't decide if it wants to be grounded or stylized.
And the Phantom's Lair is...
I'm sorry, Taylor. Are you talking about the queue for Pirates of the Caribbean?
Oh, it's so ugly.
It's... First, can we just... I just really want to say about the Phantom's Lair. There's, like... sunlight coming in?
Yeah, where is the sun coming from?
Where they're underground. This is an underground lair. There should be no sunlight. Also, a lot of a garish light of day in Music of the Night.
Also, it's like...
hideous.
Where did the horse come from?
Where did the horse come... The horse isn't even white like he is in the book.
I get that the horse is from the book, but... Why horse? Why horse?
Why horse? Why horse? Why horse? It's such a weird, like, journey that they take, because he's leading her by the hand, and then, it, like, by the way that it's edited, it's like, he puts her on the horse, they walk a few feet, and then they get to the boat.
Yeah, why was the horse needed?
Why was the horse necessary, sir?
You could have walked. He walked, even.
And like, oh my god, it literally does just look like either a mini golf course or the queue for Pirates of the Caribbean. It's so bad.
Also, fuck the candles coming out of the water. Fuck off.
Literally coming out of the water.
Fuck off. Fuck off. It's a scene transition in the stage show. Like, it's not literal candles coming out of the actual real water.
It's so bright down there. I know we just mentioned the sunlight, but just in general, it's so bright down there. Also, I mean, we were gonna get to this point. I know we've already said Gerard Butler can't sing. I'm sorry, his Music of the Night is so atrocious that I had to pause the movie, go find both Norm Lewis and Ramin Karimloo singing this song, and listen to those before continuing on with the movie. I needed to take a fucking break after I had to listen to this man sing Music of the Night.
It felt a whole lot like when we watched Les Mis, and during Bring Him Home, I just slowly reached over.
No, that was me reaching for the
remote. Oh, yes. You reached over, you grabbed the remote, you muted it, and then you just put on Colm Wilkinson?
No, I didn't. I didn't even put on another one. I just fucking muted it, and we sat there in silence.
I feel like someone put on Colm Wilkinson.
No, not to my recollection. I could be remembering wrong, though. I try to block out my memories of watching Tom Hooper's Les Mis whenever I do it. So
that's one of the only things I remember about that viewing, was that, and then crying at the end, even though we hated the movie.
Yeah, I remember that. I remember stopping myself from crying at A Little Fall of Rain because I wasn't going to let Tommy Hooper take that from me. And yeah, we both cried at the end because that ending is genetically created in a lab to make you cry.
Unlike anyway, the ending of this movie, which goes on for way too fucking long. Can we talk about the framing devices? Because they suck so bad. Let's talk about the framing device.
I will say, the overture in this movie sounds very good. I actually really like a lot of the orchestrations in this. A lot of them. Not all of them. Looking at you, that fucking guitar riff in Phantom of the Opera.
No, I love that guitar riff. I do love it.
The orchestra for, like, the actual part, not the orchestra, the overture that is the actual overture, because they extend the overture a little bit to, like, encompass the whole opening of the movie. But, like, the actual overture sounds fucking incredible, and I did get a little bit of a rush watching the chandelier rise. That was the only, like, point in this movie where I was like, you know what? I'm vibing.
The thing that sucks is that you're, like, watching it and you're like, maybe it'll all be okay.
And then it's not.
And then it isn't. And, it,
and then,
it
the, or- and then the overture starts going on, and you're like, oh, wait, never mind. We're in Phantom of the Opera. we're in Joel Schumacher's Phantom of the Opera.
The overture to Phantom of the Opera is one of the best pieces of music ever written.
Lord Andy, God, say what you want about him. He's a terrible person, and he sucks. The man knows how to write an overture, because Cats and Phantom of the Opera have some of the best overtures I've ever heard.
Literally.
And I've got to hear both of them in person in the span of 3 months.
And you slayed.
I did slay.
Yeah, the framing devices.
Framing device, oh my god. We didn't need it. The reason we have a quote-unquote framing device in the opening is literally just so we have something to look at before the big bombastic overture starts. And that's it. That's the only reason. Like, and in the movie, it just keeps cutting in, and it goes on and on and on, and when you think the movie's over, it's like, nope, we're back in the framing device. We have to make sure that Raoul knows that he can get cucked even though his wife is dead.
Yeah, that's insane.
How old would Eric be at that point? Or the Phantom?
He's, like, got his little, like, a little cane. Like, like old man Jenkins, like, walking into the graveyard to leave a little rose.
Oh my god. Like, I know Raoul and the Phantom are, like, around the same age in this adaptation because Lord Andy is a coward.
It shouldn't be, actually.
If it really was, if it was, like, actual Eric, he'd be fucking dead.
He's elderly.
Patrick Wilson had old age makeup, man. What a time.
Patrick Wilson's wig.
Okay, I need to know two things about Patrick Wilson and Gerard Butler in this movie. Number one, why does Patrick Wilson sing better in the horror movie that isn't a musical than he does here? Not that he doesn't do a fine job here, but he's doing that thing that is in, like, every movie musical where no one is allowed to belt, and it makes me insane every time I hear it. Two, why is Gerard Butler singing better in an SNL skit than he is in this movie? Like, that's singing! He's good! Why?
Why did they do this to us?
I mean, I imagine with Gerard Butler, it's just that he's, like, developed his singing voice more between being in Phantom and being on SNL, but it still makes me crazy.
Like, Jimmy, I'm so tired.
I'm so exhausted. We haven't even, what else can we fucking touch upon in this movie that we haven't already? Because there's a lot. I have 6.5 pages of notes on this movie. Oh, my original intro for this movie was going to be, I'm an unfunny running gag about scrap metal. What the fuck was that?
Stupid.
Was that just, like, more Moulin Rouge shit? Oh, you know what we can talk about? Let's talk about this. Let's talk about Carlotta in this movie.
Oh, don't get me started.
Minnie Driver, best actress in this movie, honestly. She's great. She's a delight. But also, I know she was dubbed. Like, Minnie Driver can sing, but I know she was dubbed by, like, an actual opera singer. And because of that, she is far and away, this opera singer is far and away the best sounding person in this movie. Which is so funny when we're all supposed to be pretending that she can't sing. or that she sucks. I'm like, no, sorry, I want her singing more in this, actually.
Which is also so bizarre, because that's not Carlotta's thing in the musical. She's a good singer. She's a great singer. She just is a bitch and no one likes her.
Exactly. And, like, we get some of that. We get too much of that, is the thing. Because, like, as she's leaving the opera house, like, the fucking stagehands are, like, mooning her and shit. And it's like, no, God, no, it's not to this extent, Andy. Hey, this is just weird, Andy. Hey, Andy, this is weird.
The other thing about Carlotta is that it's like, if she's a terrible singer, why is she the prima donna?
Yeah. Like, that's not how it works.
Like, other adaptations have gone this angle. Like, I have not seen the Robert Englund one in years. But if I remember correctly, I think she's married in that one to the guy who owns the theater.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, she's not that good. But she's a nepo baby. Yeah, so it's like, if you're gonna do the, oh, the fandom doesn't like her because she's a terrible singer, but she's the resident prima donna, then, like, give an in-universe reason why she continues to be the prima donna even if she's a bad singer.
Yeah, and it's doubly insane when you put her, and again, I'm so sorry, Amy Rossum. Her voice actually wasn't as bad as I remember it, but, like, compared to the gorgeous opera singer that they have dubbing Minnie Driver, she sounds like a little church mouse.
Yeah, she sounds like a 16-year-old trying to sing Phantom of the Opera.
Yeah, exactly. Which is what she is.
Yeah. And it's like, in what fucking universe would a guy whose entire thing is that he wants his music to be, like, sung in, like, the perfect way be more invested in having this random 16-year-old sing his music than this person who is very well-trained and, like, sounds good? It's bizarre. And it's like, yeah, it's because he wants to fuck her, but, like,
yeah.
The reason he wants to fuck her is because she has the most beautiful voice he's ever heard.
Exactly.
That's the whole thing. Like, yeah, she's beautiful, but, like, he loves her.
Even Susan K. understood this, Andy. Even Susan K. understood this.
Even in the multitude of sins that Susan K. wrought upon us in her book, which, listen, this isn't a podcast about Susan K.'s Phantom, but I could go off. I won't, but I could.
Mm-hmm.
At least she understood that the thing about Christine Daae is that she's a fucking fantastic singer, and that's why Eric loves her. That's the whole thing.
And then he actually meets her and he wants her to peg him. Anyway.
She didn't understand that.
Well, you know what? Since we're talking about good old Sue, our friend Sue.
Susie.
Our worst enemy, Susie.
She gave us Nadir's name, and she gave us Aisha, and that's all. That's all she gave us.
That's all we're taking from her.
And if you know what that sentence meant, congratulations.
Congratulations, you're also a loser.
Yeah.
You also had an interesting 2011. You want to talk about Phantom's backstory? How it manages to be even more racist than good old Susie?
Which, again, considering how racist Phantom by Susan K. gets, that is saying something.
That's an accomplishment. Like, hey, Andrew. Andrew, can you sit down for a minute, Andrew? Andrew, I need to talk to you about something in this movie.
A few things, but, like,
I have some notes about this movie, Andy. But my most prominent one right now. How come the Phantom started interacting with Christine when she was 7? Hey, Andy. Let's talk about that. Is the implication supposed to be because, like, he's, like, a little older than her, but not as, like, it's still creepy, but it's, like, maybe he's not as old as most Phantoms are compared to their, no, actually, you know what, that's not right, because most Phantoms are, like, what, 45, 50? Most Christines on stage are, like,
mid-late 20s,
like, no, the age gap there is pretty, like, It's bad.
But also, hey. Like, if we take into account that Christine is supposed to be 16 years old.
Yeah. Nope. Nope, that's not an excuse. Nope.
Yeah, no.
Never mind. I was trying to defend you. I was trying to give you the benefit of the doubt, Andy, but hey, no, that's not cool.
Still bad. Still bad. Hey, why did you take a thing where it's, like, not grooming, and you made it grooming?
Why'd you do that, Andy?
I know the answer. In the musical that you wrote, it was not a grooming situation. And then
they started talking when they were both consenting adults.
And then in the movie you said, what if it was grooming?
What if it was grooming, though? Hey, Andy.
And now there are people who genuinely think that, like, in the book and the musical, it's a grooming situation.
Oh my god, do you remember when they announced that it was canceled and all those weirdos crawled out of the woodwork like, oh man, this is so great for, like, victims of stalking? And I'm like, do you really think that Phantom of the Opera is causing stalking to happen? Hey.
I mean, after I saw Phantom, I started stalking people. So
you started,
like,
stalking your local soprano, yeah.
Yeah, I 100% started doing that. I was influenced. Hashtag
and,
influenced.
And that's how this podcast came to be.
And then I got her, and now we do a podcast together.
Just kidding, I'm a mezzo.
That would be really funny. Imagine if I told you that live on air. I was like, actually, this has been a massive long con. I got you.
Why aren't you a sexy deformed guy, though?
I got you in my clutches. And now we're going down to the basement. Wait,
bye,
no,
everyone.
Wait, hold on. The basement in my house where we watch movies. Come, fuck.
Oh, no.
Oh, no.
Am I a Christine variant? Is that the answer?
Hey, guys. Hey, my brain's a little everywhere right now because I have a little bit of a cold.
And, not COVID.
Not shockingly not COVID. Just a cold that is ruining my day today. So you can imagine how I felt when I woke up today.
And had to watch Phantom of the Opera.
I had to watch Phantom of the Opera. So I feel
you watched
a little
it all
nut.
The way through is the thing. Here's the thing. I know every time I watch this movie, because I usually watch this movie in the context of, like, oh, this is going to be, like, a funny, bad movie.
You can't.
And every time
mistake.
I watch this movie, it's a funny, bad movie up until, like, Masquerade. And then I start just being like, oh, God, this is fucking dragging. Because this movie is too long. This movie is way too long. So much could have been cut from this movie and still kept Phantom of the Opera intact. Cough, cough, that weird booby trap scene with Raoul at the end. Cough, cough. Also, the torture chamber. Why was the torture chamber there when it wasn't even working the way it does in the book? Whatever. But what I did, I was smart. I was like, I'm going to watch half of this on Friday, half of this on Sunday. And you know what? I will say it made my viewing experience slightly better. Although, hey, if we're talking about things that ruined our day, Lord Andy owes me emotional compensation for making me listen to a version of All I Ask of You that makes me feel nothing.
Yeah, All I Ask of You is
that's
one of the greatest
fucking,
love songs
that's
ever
my,
written.
That's my fucking Blorbo song, you bitch. That's my Ghost Head song, and it made me feel nothing. Watching Patrick Wilson trying so hard not to touch this fucking 16-year-old inappropriately during this song. You can see when they kiss how fucking uncomfortable this man is kissing a 16-year-old. He's in his 30s in this movie.
It's honestly, you can see it with Gerard Butler too, which is really funny.
Which is really funny, especially in Music of the Night, which is supposed to be this, like, seduction song, and Gerard Butler is, like, very carefully positioning his hands to keep it chaste.
He is very much
16.
Doing. He's doing the blocking. Like, he is doing what he has been told to do with his hands, no more, no less. Like,
exactly.
I'm here, I'm being paid. If I have to, I will.
This is a check.
Yep.
I gotta pay rent.
Don't we all?
Yeah. That's another musical. Anyway.
Rent.
Anyway, I'll be waiting for my fucking check, Lord Andy. I'll be fucking waiting because you owe me.
Listen, he doesn't even pay the people who work for him.
That's true.
That's my dunk on Lord Andy.
This whole episode is our dunk on Lord Andy. Like, because instead, like, listen. Cats, bad, not Lord Andy's fault. He had very little to do with that production. Phantom of the Opera, he was involved. He did the screenplay with Joel Schumacher because Phantom of the Opera is his fucking baby because it's his weird self-insert fanfiction. We're all aware of this. And boy, there's no better showcase of why you shouldn't give things to, like, wealthy auteurs who are going to micromanage every single aspect of production. We're almost done with this episode, and I haven't even touched upon, like, all of the things I want to say about how bad this movie is. I'm sorry. I'm sorry. God.
I mean, rapid fire.
Rapid fire. You know what? Here's... I will say one thing.
Listening.
Not bad. This is actually a compliment. If you close your eyes, if you divorce some of the music in this when Emmy and Gerard aren't on screen, I honestly think this version of Masquerade sounds really good for the most part. Once the sing-speaking starts, no. But, like, the actual crowd song sounds really good, and it sounds better, I think, than a lot of the versions I've heard, because the versions I've heard are from, like, the stage, and there's always sort of a cacophonous vibe that I can't really get into. This one
sounds tight. Yeah, I feel the same way about Notes.
Yeah, this one sounds tight and polished. There's a span of this movie in, like, the Notes prima donna thing where it sounds good, which is insane because Notes and prima donna are, like, a mess on stage all the time.
Well, yeah, because the problem on stage is that, like, there's no auditory distinction between everybody's, like, random-ass vocal parts. But, like, when you're making a movie, obviously you're doing, like, intense audio editing. So you can emphasize and de-emphasize people's vocals depending on what is relevant at that time and who is on screen. But when everyone's just standing on the stage, it's like, oh, everyone's just standing together and singing at you. So for that, I will give the movie props. Because Notes is one of my least favorite songs in Phantom for that reason.
Mm-hmm.
And this version is more palatable because of the audio editing. So props to this movie for that, I guess.
Some of the costumes in this movie are also pretty cool. I like
some of them.
I like Christine's masquerade dress a lot, and I like her wedding dress.
I hate her white dress. I hate it. I hate it. I hate it.
I like it. Sorry.
Oh!
Listen, I like it visually. I hate that it made everyone for a long time and continues to this day cast Emmy Rossum as Melanie Ravenswood, because that's not the vibe. She's not the vibe. I'm sorry. I love Emmy Rossum. I think she's gorgeous. She's not the vibe for Melanie.
It's not the vibe. Stop. I can't scream because I'm sick, but just imagine I'm saying it like HRH Collection says it. It's not the vibe. Okay. Stop.
Rapid fire complaints. Tango dancers. Why?
I will say, though, too, Point of No Return looks so cheap. It looks so community theater.
It looks like a Spirit Halloween. This whole movie looks cheap in a lot of ways. The only good, like, grand set are, like, the Opera House ones. Like, the foyer looks good. The auditorium looks good. Everything else, horrendous.
I can't get over the, like, Pippin flames.
The Pippin flames! The big, spirit Halloween fire lamp in the middle of Point of No Return.
It's so bad.
And the, like, Halloween costumes everyone is in. Oh my god, it's awful.
Also, like, why is the Phantom wearing a domino mask? His deformity goes all the way down his face. Why would that cover? It doesn't.
It doesn't. That's why it doesn't cut. I don't know, Taylor. Also, hey, while we're talking about Point of No Return, listen, I can suspend my disbelief in the stage show that no one notices that Pyongyi is all of a sudden, like, I don't know, 50 pounds lighter.
Well, yeah, because Eric is covered head to toe.
Exactly. His face is covered. His whole body is covered. Here, nothing. They should have realized right away that the Phantom was there. They should have been like, hey, there's that guy. Arrest him.
I love just, like, the cuts over to Ral watching this. Like, I can't believe this is happening. I'm not going to do shit about it, though.
This man is watching himself get cucked in real time and doing nothing.
This is so, like,
Patrick,
like, when alt-right weirdos talk about, like, the cucking, like, they're talking about what Ral is feeling in this film.
Patrick Wilson is such a good choice for Ral, and it sucks that he's in this version of Phantom of the Opera.
I know, and the fact of the matter is, like, now he's too fucking old to play Ral, because it's been 20 years. By the way, it's been 20 years since this movie came out.
Hate that. I know, it's been 19.
It's been nearly 20 years since this movie came out. We're not quite there yet.
Hey, can we talk about how this movie was possibly in theaters at the same time as Saw? Because Saw came out in October of 2004, and this was December of 2004. There is a very real possibility that at least one theater in the world was showing, simultaneously, James Wan's Saw and Joel Schumacher's Phantom of the Opera.
That's a theater I'd like to go to.
Yeah. Do you want to end it on that note? I think we should end it on that note.
I agree. Bring it all home. Bring it all back together.
Bring it all back. You know what? I shall end it on this. The saddest thing about this movie is that we're never going to get, like, a good Phantom of the Opera movie.
No, because this one flopped so bad.
Well, no, that and, like, Lord Andy isn't gonna let it happen. Lord Andy probably thinks this movie's fucking perfect because it's right to his vision.
That's okay. He's gonna die soon.
That's true.
We'll get a good one after he dies.
God, I hope so. Just, you know what? I say this about so many adaptations, but, like, hand that shit to Guillermo del Toro. Let him do it. Like, we all, like, Guillermo del Toro's Phantom of the Opera would fucking rock, and I think we just need to let him do it.
I agree, but I do think he would be better at a non-musical version.
That's true.
I think we need to let him do like a horny Les Mis, like BBC Les Mis style Phantom of the Opera miniseries.
Oh my god. Yeah, we'll absolutely do.
We'll end on that with a vision of what could be if God is merciful to us.
Hopeful vision of the future.
Much like, you know, like I feel like we're like on Spaceship Earth and it's like, okay, we're giving you like the tools to go make the future better. So go, do. If you have any influence in Hollywood, get Guillermo del Toro on the phone. Tell him he needs to do this. The book is public domain. You don't even need to get the rights to anything.
Well, wait a minute. Let him do Frankenstein first, and then he can do Phantom.
Yeah. After he does Frankenstein. God, I can't wait for that.
Oh, God. Speaking of adaptations that are gonna fuck severely.
Oh, so exciting. But would you like to read some Letterboxd reviews?
Taylor, I would love to.
So I have a dark confession to start off this segment.
Okay.
Ominous, it was so hard to find reviews that were not overwhelmingly positive.
I thought the same thing looking at the Letterboxd reviews for this movie.
Yeah.
I was like, what is in the water y'all are drinking? I'm so sorry, but...
There were so many 4- and 5-star reviews, and I'm so sorry, but I cannot abide it. I can't do it. But here are some funny ones I found. Terrible Pun Name says, at last, a movie for me. A sexually repressed hermit who can't sing and fucking loves candles. 1 star. Same.
Big mood.
Me too.
Big mood. It says I actually can sing a little. Only a little, though.
Bella says, this movie made me cry and cum at the same time. And she gave it 4.5 stars, but I thought that review was funny enough that I'll let it slide.
It was funny. We'll forgive you.
I respect people who are horny about this movie.
It couldn't be me, but I get it.
Yeah, I get it. If you like this movie because you think it's sexy, more power to you. Yep. I have also enjoyed terrible movies because I found things about them very sexy. So, like, respect if this is
your thing. We're horror fans. We know that feeling well.
I won't give examples because they could get me canceled, but I'll leave it there. The real ones know. Real ones know. Angela says, turns out you can get cucked even when your wife is dead. 2 stars.
Yeah! I did reference that very review earlier.
Yeah, fuck yeah.
It's true, though.
Phoebe says, every woman has 2 wolves inside of her. One of them is angel-voiced Patrick Wilson singing to her in the snow on top of the Palais Garnier, and the other one is a literal terrorist fucking her in a sewer. 4 stars.
Essence of Christine Daae.
Truly.
That woman has two wolves.
This one's for Friend of the Pod, Eleanor. Mooney says, this felt like a Riverdale musical episode. 1.5 star.
So fucking true, bestie.
This one made me cackle laugh so hard. Ada says, they always got his ass peeking around a corner. 0 stars, and just a heart. And I,
why is that like, so funny?
I just... You're right.
They do
always got his ass peeking around a corner. And finally, this review, which is a little long, but I do want to read in its entirety because it is very funny.
Please.
Henry says, "This is some discount Baz Luhrmann Harry Potter shit. All the singing here is out of place. Jesus Christ. Emmy Rossum is 17 in this. Patrick Wilson is 30. And Gerard Butler is 34. WTF? And why does the Phantom look like Michael Myers?"
He does look like Michael Myers!
1.5 stars. I wanted to give Henry their due. Because that was a fucking delightful review.
Masterful. Masterful.
Why does the Phantom look like Michael Myers?
Why? Like, it's the way his mask is sculpted. Man, and just like Michael Myers, they always got his ass peeking around corners.
They do always got his ass peeking around corners. So how many stars are you giving this damn thing?
1 star for my good friend Juicy Pat, and that's it.
I'm also going to give it 1 star. I think I gave it 2 on Letterboxd. I don't quite know why. I'll give it 1. This movie is unforgivable. This is an unforgivable cinema film.
So many crimes were committed against me personally in this film.
This movie is, and I'm going to say it, this film is homophobic.
It is made by Andrew Lloyd Webber.
This film hates, and not any, and like, to call a film directed by an openly gay man homophobic, it takes a lot, but this movie manages it.
Yeah.
This is a homophobic film.
This movie is a homophobic hate crime against theater kids.
Literally. Like, it's so fucked up. It's so fucked up. How glad are you that this is not actually the 50th episode?
Extremely glad, because, listeners, the time has come.
I hope you're all ready.
I hope you're all ready. For our 50th anniversary, because we had to do our little April Fool's joke for 49.5. For our 50th episode, we will be reviewing another film from 2004. Perhaps the greatest film known to man. Van Helsing.
Van fucking Helsing, baby.
For those not in the know, our podcast was very, very terrifyingly close to being called the greatest film since Van Helsing. And we are going to give this cinematic achievement proper due on our podcast.
When I tell you, listen, listeners, if you have not seen the movie Van Helsing, and you don't know anything about it, if this film somehow has passed you by, first of all, I'm sorry that you haven't experienced it, because it's a joy. Second of all, this movie does for bad movies basically what the opposite of Phantom of the Opera does for bad movies, in that it is bad from beginning to end, and it is just chef kiss. Ugh. Perfect.
Absolutely delightful.
This movie should be up there with The Room in terms of, like, bafflingly made terrible movies. And it's a shame that nobody talks about it, but we fucking will.
And unlike this movie, it is extremely sexy.
Oh my god. The level of sexual...
It is a sexy movie. So we will be covering that next time. And until then, until that glorious day, you can follow us on Twitter, Instagram, and TikTok. I always say Facebook by accident. We don't have a Facebook, and we never will. Twitter, Instagram, and TikTok at FGFpod. And we would appreciate it if you enjoy what we did here today. Give us those 5 stars on Apple Podcasts, Spotify. Do whatever it is you do on your podcast platform of choice to let us know you had fun here with us today. And we will see you next time for Van Helsing. Bye, everybody.
Bye.